is time for another No Filter Sports. It is August 24th as we record this, a Monday. I'm back. I was gone for the last show, but I did listen to it. And gentlemen, I thought you guys had a very entertaining show. I would say the last one was a 1, and this one was a 9.9. The one without me, would you had didn't have a guest
host. The Ron Cameron show. You will not let that go. You refuse to let that Ron Cameron show go.
I thought you two were awful even before Cameron came on.
It really was. I mean, if you want to be honest, it was a horrible show. It really was.
But this one was a complete turnaround.
I don't agree with that. Anyway,
go ahead. Okay. No, I thought the three of you meshed beautifully, and in fact, on the first time I was gone, there was all this fact-checking. I've got very little fact-checking. In fact, one that was driving me crazy, both Brandon and Denny popped in to say that her name is Gretchen Whitmer, not Christine Whitmer, so they corrected you. So no fact-check right there. The one that got me, though, a little bit was when you were talking about Horace Clark, who I do remember well, and I thought Fred made some great comments about him. The obituary on Clark, and you mentioned how the Yankees were awful in the 70s. I said, whoa, they weren't awful in the 70s. So, of course, I did the research. You know, the Yankees won in a 16-year period from 49 to 64. They won 14 American League pennants, 9 World Series. That after 64, when they lost to the same Cardinals that won in 67 and led Denny's team 3-1 in 68, after that 64 loss to the Cardinals, yes, the Yankees fell into a deep hole. They finished 10th in 66, and they were no higher than fourth till 75. But then from 76 to 78, they were in the World Series every year with Reggie Jackson and Catfish Hunter.
Horace wasn't on those teams. Was he?
Horace wasn't on those. No, you guys said
that's what we were talking about.
You didn't listen to me. You said the Yankees were horrible in the 60s and
70s. Oh, okay.
I think what I had meant was the Yankees had broken up from the teams that they had in the early 60s. The Billy Martins were gone. The Mantles were gone. The Roger Maris's were gone. Bobby Richardson's were gone. Right, the Pepitone's were gone. I think that's more or less what we were talking about rather than them being destroyed. But they still had a good organization.
They were awful. Then Steinbrenner bought them in 72, and then he started spending money. And the Yankees were back again with Mr. October at Catfish and Nettles and all those guys. So that was fine. I had no fact-checking.
How did you like all of the professional New York voiceover artist reads on the commercials?
Oh, you're just amazing, Bob. Nobody can read a commercial quite like you.
Of course, you can't. That's all I got
to
say.
Well, you take it to another level. I just wish you would either make your because you're so sincere. And as I said a long time ago, once you learn how to fake sincerity, you became an amazing broadcaster.
You have authored some great, great comments over the many, many years. And that's really one of my favorites. You know, you're acting natural on TV. Yeah. That's what you always say.
Yeah, well, and
it's so true. And you know, the thing about it is, I think that, believe it or not, the two greatest influences I ever had in my radio career were both Paul Harvey and Bob Reynolds in Detroit, because what they taught me was just to have a conversation with the listener. You may have thousands of listeners, but it's just the two of you. Paul Harvey's talking to me personally. Bob Reynolds is talking to me.
It is so ironic that you brought up Bob Reynolds, because you're going to hear from Bob Reynolds, the late Bob Reynolds, later when we interview Dexter Bussey, who is our special guest today. One of the nicest men, oh, that sounds cliche-ish, but truly one of the great class acts that have ever come through Detroit in any sport, not just the Lions. One of the nicest men I've ever met in the business, a great soldier, a dutiful soldier. You know, they draft Billy Sims, they make him a fullback. He starts opening holes for Sims. He was just a good guy who fought hard in a 10-year career, and you'll hear.
And you know what, Eli, there's a book entitled When Bad Things Happen to Good People. So we're going to talk to Dexter Bussey about the bad thing that's going on with him. And we hope he's okay. He's got another chemotherapy thing coming up Monday today as we record the show, right?
He had his prostate removed in 2013, and then it came back, whatever. They didn't get all of it. So he's going, but he's not complaining. This is typical Dexter Bussey. No complaints. He's going to come on after chemo today. Said he felt fine after the first session as he started again. But he's also part of the class action suit with the concussions. He got his bell rung multiple times running the ball. He led the Lions in rushing.
And didn't you love that term? He just got his bell rung.
Should we be talking about his medical issues? I mean, have we got his permission to talk about taking his pants down and examining him?
No, but we'll you're right, Denny, but I don't.
This is
think
the no filter sports show.
I don't think we're,
not of somebody's life though.
I don't think we're breaking any HIPAA laws on that, but we'll talk to him later. And Bob,
I'm not
Reynolds,
talking about HIPAA laws. I don't know if he would approve. That's all.
And I'm going to say this about Bob Reynolds right now. If you haven't heard of him, people, I don't blame you, because when I started,
I bet Brandon doesn't know who he is.
Of course he doesn't.
No, never heard of him.
In fact, I'd never heard of him until I became a sports reporter in 1975 and 76. I used to hear him on WJR, and it blew my mind because Bob Reynolds was an icon in this town. He was on WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes, for decades. He was a sports director, did the Lions play, did everything. And so I don't know if I told the story or not, but so I'm driving around in my car in 75 city because I couldn't get enough sports. I went to every event, every press conference, every game. I loved it. I couldn't believe I was getting paid for this. And I would listen to Bob Reynolds come on WJR, the great voice of the Great Lakes, broadcasting all over the country. And what was he doing? He was reading the same AP wire copy word for word that I saw in the morning. And I said to myself, wait a minute, I'm here writing stories. I'm doing interviews. I'm pontificating. I'm giving opinions. I'm telling facts. And this guy is reading what some guy in an
office. I'll tell you what, Eli, you know this.
I said to myself, I will never get that lazy, no matter how long I stay in this business.
Yeah, well, you know this, Eli, because we were kids back then. We were already buddies, and we talked about this. Bob Reynolds brought me down from Channel 6 in Lansing to work at WJR in 1975, and one of the main reasons was just this, what you're talking about. I said, give me a tape recorder. Let me go to the games. Reynolds would go on the shows at night and say, said Alex Delvecchio.
Right.
That we had. Let me get a tape recorder, Bob. We can have Alex Delvecchio on the air.
It was the ultimate laziness, and I could not. And he wasn't the only one. I started watching, you know, Ackerman and Dave Dials and them and Ray Lane, and I never saw him at a game. I go, why aren't they here? Why wouldn't they want to be here? As it turns out, I became a little lazy too when I became an anchor, because how many hours a day can you work? I used to go to the Tiger games, like between when I was at Channel 4 for an hour or so in the evenings between shows. But when you're stuck in the studio, it makes you a worse reporter because you don't have time.
Man, I was a kid. I would say one more thing about Bob. I was a boy, essentially, and this was such a thrill for me to be in my hometown of the great voice of the Great Lakes. Man, I got to take real taxi cabs. I don't think I'd ever been in one before, over to the Olympia to cover a Wings game. One night, I'm going over there, and I said to Bob, yeah, I'm going to the game. Come on, let's go together. We'll sit in the press box, have a good time. He says, no, Bobby. I said, you got plenty of time. You can leave early. He says, Bob, I don't want to break my streak. I said, what streak is that? I haven't been to a Red Wings game in 20 years.
You know, it's
sports
just
director of the disgusting Red Wings flagship radio station.
Yeah, I never got it. And but anyway, he's a Hall of Famer, and guess who is?
And Brandon, next Thursday, Brandon, we're going to do your life, Brandon. We are going to do your life.
I'm sorry, Denny. You kept you out of this one.
I knew Bob real well. We had a lot of fun with Bob down at the ballpark. He was there a lot at the ball game.
And he did like to tip a few. Didn't he tipple a few?
Oh, man, tip.
A few? You had to listen to his 11:15 show because he ate his dinner at the Recess Club in the Fisher Building every night. The slurred words at 11:15 on his show, the mispronunciations, it was pretty embarrassing.
Let me tell you the guy that really tipped big time. I had dinner with him maybe 30 times in about 2 years.
Bill Bonds.
Mr. Bonds.
Well, I worked with him.
And I'm telling you, down at what was the club at 12 Mile and Northwestern?
Yeah.
Excalibur.
Excalibur.
I'd go in there, you know, once a week sometimes. And there he was at 7 o'clock having his dinner and never quite eating the dinner.
Well, you know,
drinking the liquid dinner that he loved so much.
He was half in the bag when he challenged Coleman Young to a fight.
Remember
which was
that?
The
yeah.
But the thing about it is, and I was there, and as I said, I worked with Bill. Yes, we knew he was doing that. He would come back, take 5 minutes to sober up, go on at 11 o'clock, give an Academy Award performance, slurring a word, and be back at the Excalibur by 11:35.
He was a brilliant, brilliant broadcaster.
He was. Bonds
by the
was
way,
great.
The Excalibur was also the place.
And a good guy, too. I liked Bill a lot.
The place did in Gary Moeller. We talked about that with Brandy a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's right, too. Yeah. A lot of things happened in that place.
So my other thing from the show was, so Denny and Fred Heumann are talking about wearing masks and the respect and all that. And here's Denny saying, just follow the rules. You got to follow the rules. And I'm thinking, How many times when we wrote the book or whatever, and I say rules, you didn't follow any. In fact, when anyone said rules, I don't follow rules. I just use them as guidelines if I want to stay in or stay out.
That's a great quote, too.
Here you are, rules. You got to follow the rules.
Lowlich so famously said, you know, the rules are different for Denny. We got one rule for 24 guys on this ball club, and Denny has his own rules. He didn't like that.
I kept trying to tell Mickey before that 68 year that if you win, you do get a little bit of favor from management. If you don't win and you're in the bullpen all the time, not getting anybody out, a lot of people don't know you're there. Eventually, he caught up.
I heard a rumor that Mickey, who dislikes you intensely, for whatever reason, and dislikes me intensely because I'm a friend of yours, that there's so much money to be made if the two of you guys would just kiss and make up and sign some autographs together and some pictures, you could make a fortune. But
Mickey, listen to me now. I'm coming to you.
Okay. I enjoyed your conversation with Fred about the Tigers, and finally they broke out. They won 2 out of 3 from Cleveland after losing 20 straight. Unfortunately, that 9-game losing streak, see, 9 straight losses in a 60-game season is 15% of the season. If you protract it out with heavy math that I'm so good at using in my statistical past, that would be like a 24-game losing streak and 162-game schedule.
You are a University of Michigan graduate. You are good at that. I matriculated merely at MU. I don't get past 3 plus 4 very easily.
Well, the fact is I didn't take any math at Michigan because I was awful at math once you get past the four functions, but I'm very good at the four functions.
Well, let's call it the way it is right now. The bottom line is just very simply, they're going to play the players they want to see play here next year. They're going to try to put guys in the games that they probably wouldn't have if they stayed competitive. And I'm not saying they're not somewhat competitive still, but I don't think they've got enough motors in their engines to go very far.
Well, they're also out of the playoff field now after that loss.
That's the point I was trying to make. Yeah. And I will say this before I say much more about Friday and Sunday. How about that kid? You got to give the kid the debut that he made for Cleveland on Saturday night.
Jesus.
He was unbelievable.
Tristan McKenzie?
Yeah.
I'm the Black Ichabod Crane. Yeah, well, this is incredible.
Let me tell you the advantage he had. As tall as he was getting 6 inches closer to the plate than anybody else has been in a long time. He had the longest legs I've ever seen. And God almighty, he brought it. He brought super heat, and the control is what impressed me. For a guy in his first major league game, just like Mize, he didn't walk anybody either. This guy was unbelievable when it came keeping the ball away from hitters. And he had the ability to throw the ball by just about anybody.
Yeah, I want to talk about
as a matter of fact, Cabrera had no chance at all.
No, I know. I want to ask you this, Danny. What did you think of Tarik Skubal on Sunday?
You know, I tell you the problem with Skubal, and I think Skubal's got good stuff. I've seen him pitch. He's got a great slider and a good curveball. And I don't know why you only throw him out there for 50 couple pitches. I don't understand it. Let him pitch. If he's got to get his brains knocked out, he'll learn something from getting his brains knocked out. He'll learn something backing up third, backing up home plate. He will learn the mechanical stuff of baseball if he's out there long enough. But taking him out, because just 50 pitches,
actually, he threw 69 pitches. It took him 2 and a third.
69, 59. Nice. Let him pitch. Let him pitch six, seven.
I agree. I think you're right. I agree.
Totally agree. But now,
we got Casey Mize going again Monday night. Most of you are listening to this program after this game. Some of the things I liked from the series, you know, I might have been wrong, and I'm not alone in being wrong. A lot of us may have been wrong. This kid, Candelario, just might be coming around finally, might be looking like a Major League Baseball player. Mm-hmm. Miggy may be coming alive. Daniel Norris, I really like him. Isaac Paredes, I think he could be a hell of a player. And what I didn't like, do you know that when Joe Jimenez came in on Sunday to close the game out with a 7-1 lead in the 9th inning, do you know his ERA taking the mound in 9 games was 9.72? He put 2 guys on, then gave up a 3-run homer. Yeah. That kid needs to go back to Toledo, and in a total no-brainer, Gregory Soto needs to be made the closer right now. And speaking of Toledo, this didn't get a lot of publicity last week, but Dowell Lugo was actually put on waivers to activate Buck Farmer. Not one single taker among other MLB teams. So he's back in Toledo. This kid was the centerpiece, and Al Avila's deal with Arizona that sent gulp JD away. Yes, the he's just like a son to me, JD Martinez, whom Avila now looks like he gave away for essentially nothing.
Well, no, let me say this. Let me tell you what they're doing right now. If they wind up in the playoffs, it's going to be a short miracle. But because I just don't think they're thinking that they can do it either unless something happens. What they're doing right now is they're going to showcase as many players as they can to possibly set up a hell of a trade at the end of the year or before spring training.
Yeah, and scope is part of this, and I don't like that.
But that's what they're doing. That's what this is all about right now. They want to pitch as many guys as they can, and it's really got to be around pitching, because if we don't have a nucleus of pitchers with our club, we're going to be in trouble anyway, because, you know, Miggy doesn't want to run anymore. And like I've always said, if you can't hustle, that's the least you can do when you're not going well, because it sends the wrong message to these young kids. They don't think they have to do it either.
Every time you see the ball get to first base, when he hits him, Miggy has already started slowing up 20 feet short. Yeah, let me go back to what Bob was saying. The Verlander trade for Frankie Perez, who has unfortunately
never pitched
many injuries, Daz Cameron and Jake Rogers hasn't quite made it. But as you alluded to, they traded Justin Wilson to the Cubs, who's now a $5 million a year Mets free agent pitcher, nothing special. And they also gave away Alex Avila also, but they got Jamer Candelario and Isaac Paredes. And I like Paredes, 21 years old. In fact, he had a pretty big hit, his first major league home run. Here's what it sounded like. Matt Shepard on the call.
Oh, smoke to left, way back. Grand slam for the rookie, Isak Paredes. He'll never forget that one.
Neither will we. No, Paredes.
He looks to me, he's just 21. He looks to me like he's going to be the type of third baseman who could really be an excellent major league hitter, but I don't know if he's going to be great defensively.
I just like his swagger. I like the way he plays. He looks a little pudgy. He's 5'11", like 225. Looks
a little slow.
Than he should be. A little slow, but maybe that's going to turn out to be a good deal if in fact Jamer becomes a starter and sticks around for a long time.
And here's the lock of the week. You will see Mr. Mize throw a number of more fastballs tonight than he did the other day. He only threw about 38% of fastballs. You don't do that in the big leagues and get away with it very long, which he found out. So you'll see more fastballs. I'll bet he's up at 60, 65% tonight. You can't set up a hitter with breaking balls. You just can't do it.
I think a third of his pitchers are the split finger, which is supposedly
he's got a good one, but it's got to be around the fastball. That's the way you set the guys up.
Let me quickly end this Tiger topic here. By the way, when you mentioned Dowell Lugo, he came with Sergio Alcantara and Jose King for JD Martinez. That one's not turning out too well.
Just like a son to me.
They traded him to Arizona. He was a good player.
Yep.
Hey, God. Unbelievable.
COVID. It's cost us a lot, all of us, many things in terms of life, comfort, fear, our jobs, whatever. But you know, one thing you can do despite the COVID is you can get your eyesight where you want it to be. You can get freedom from glasses, contacts.
I was wondering where you were going with that. Okay.
See well, get the best vision of your life. And how you do that, you go to see Dr. Yaldo. Most custom LASIK patients under 45 get better than 20/20 vision. I got that back when I was 50. I couldn't believe how much better I saw without my glasses than I ever did with them. Then I got the multifocal lens implants. I can see microscopic print without reading glasses. My far vision is high def. This is not hype. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. Call Dr. Yaldo. Get a free evaluation. Hundreds of people who have listened to the Red Shovel Network have gone to see him and have come out with life-changing surgeries and a bright future where they can see beautifully without glasses and contacts. Find out which procedure works for you. Call 1-800-398-EYES. Go to Yaldo Eye Center. Tell them No Filter Sports sent you. You'll get special discounts. And if you want a luxury car, why not go to Lincoln? They have a legacy of creating luxury cars. And buying a Lincoln, you can demand that both the buying and the service elements are unequaled. It's why Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, my place, leads the field. An exemplary family business formed by the legendary auto giant and philanthropist Hoot McInerney. The buying process during this pandemic has been amazing. People have written hundreds of five-star reviews, say how easy it has been to go to Star and get a car they want quicker than they anticipated. You can also buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. So make an appointment at 248-354-4900. Star Lincoln, Hoot McInerney's Star Lincoln. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
I got more baseball, a lot more.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah, you guys, I want to start with a couple things here. First of all, on Thursday, you heard Denny with Fred Heumann and me say that the main reason the White Sox were beating up on the Tigers because of the Tigers' awful pitching. So Brandon, Heumann, and I scoffed at that. I said, the White Sox are beating up on everybody. Saturday, Jose Abreu hit three homers in a 7-4 win over the Cubs. He had hit two on Friday night. I guess the Cubs pitching must be terrible too. Then Abreu on Sunday tied a major league record when he homered in his first at bat against the Cubs, marking his fourth straight appearance with a home run and the sixth home run in the series. Now the Cubs did win on Sunday, at least 2-1. White Sox are good.
Four consecutive at bats, you're saying. Four straight consecutive at bats.
Yeah, whatever they said.
And then the White Sox have a good club. I will concede that, but I've got news for you guys. Okay, they aren't the 1929 Yankees, not even close.
27, you mean,
them
right?
Something that they are or aren't, because they aren't.
Who said they were?
Defensively, they're not really good. They got the left side of infield pretty good, but
hey, listen,
and they got some young pitchers that may wind up getting them in the playoffs. I hope they get in the playoffs.
I hope this doesn't come off as a racist comment, but when I was a
kid, you're done, the cancel culture. Eli Zarrett's life will be over.
Well, maybe so. Here's what I'm going to say. When I was a kid and a baseball fan, the Latin guys were little. There was little Louis Aparicio, and there was little Leo Cardino. And now these Hispanic players are coming up here 6'4", like Abreu and this Eloy Jimenez. They are huge. They are just gigantic, fast, powerful. As the great Al Kaline, the late great Al Kaline said, the Hispanic players saved the game. Okay,
I think it's also worth noting with this Chicago White Sox team, they have a real benefit of Cuba. Jose Abreu was there first. However,
that's right.
What happened? Well, Yoan Moncada, he's Cuban. I want to go play with Jose Abreu. How about Eloy Jimenez? I'm Cuban and I'm really good. I want to play with Jose Abreu and Yoan Moncada. And then here comes Luis Robert. And then, you know, this team also added Edwin Encarnacion, Yasmani Grandal, who is, you know, maybe top five for the hitters in of any catcher in the entire league. And then you mentioned the arms. Lucas Giolito is going to be a star here. Dallas Keuchel's already won a World Series and a Cy Young,
I think.
That's the first non-Hispanic that you've mentioned.
That's a good point, Eli.
Aren't there any Robin Venturas left on this team? Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point, because remember when the NBA was so struggling years ago, people said, well, the NBA is too black. The NBA is almost an entirely black league. I'm not going to watch it anymore. Well, guess what? Yeah. Baseball is becoming almost an entirely Latino game, and I don't see any problems with the ratings, man. I don't care what, if your skin color is purple with pink polka dots, if you can play, you can play, and we want to see you.
Can I get into this now briefly? Because well,
I got more baseball, but go ahead, whatever
you got. I listened to your show the other day, and I listened to the part about Tom Brenneman and all that, a very, very difficult situation, but that is nothing compared to what happened to Mike Milbury. Are you familiar with what happened to Mike Milbury?
We talked about that. You didn't listen to the whole show.
Well, did you? Did you really? It sounded like you were mostly talking about.
I think
Brenneman's situation.
A lot of time at Brenneman.
But what he said was nothing. At least, you know,
nothing.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing. In fact, he said a fact. Brian Boucher, his co-host, this is the Thursday's game of the Islanders and the Capitals. He was talking with Brian Boucher about the bubble environment. Boucher said, if you think about it, it's a terrific environment. If you enjoy playing and enjoy being with your teammates for long periods of time, it's a perfect place. Milbury says, it's the perfect place. Not even any women here to disrupt your concentration.
Right.
It's true. It's not a knock on women.
It's true. It's not just a knock on women.
Since
you didn't hear this, Eli.
I didn't hear it. You didn't talk about it in any depth.
I used was if a large group of women got together for a very big event and decided they didn't want men there. And then somebody said, well, why don't you have any men here? And one of the women leaders of the event said, well, we just think that having men here, you know, it might be a distraction. And she'd be right. But nothing would happen to her. And now the New York Post on Sunday refers to Mike Milbury as, quote, the disgraced Mike Milbury. in a headline. It's amazing what's going on here. Had enough yet, folks?
Listen,
Brenneman now is not going to call NFL games either.
And he did not, he did not mean the way they assumed he said it.
No, he did not.
He wanted not even close.
It wasn't negative.
It was a fact. It was a positive fact.
And what did the NHL say? They condemn the insensitive and insulting comment that Mike Milbury made. It does not reflect the NHL's values and commitment to making our game more inclusive and welcoming to all. Listen, boxers, for years, it was assumed you go train away from your family and women so you can concentrate on what you're doing and build up the intensity you need to win a championship. Authors go quarantine themselves. They can write. They don't want their wives, their kids around so they can concentrate on what they're doing. It's so much beyond
it is. And you know what, Eli? You know what? A lot of fools on Twitter tweeting me and everybody else over the weekend actually had the temerity to make this a referendum on Milbury as a color commentator. Mike's controversial. He's opinionated. I like him. A lot of people hate him. It's not about Mike Milbury, the commentator. It's only about what he said and the mindless PC posse's reaction to it. Okay, boys, now I want your opinion on this. Okay, listen up. A video is making the rounds entitled NBA Player Appears to Call Player Bitch Ass White Boy. Montreal Herald did actually say that to the great Luka Doncic in a game Friday night. So Clippers coach Doc Rivers said it was wrong, but just something that happened in the heat of the moment. Harrell has since apologized, as he should have. But how come when people like Milbury and Brenneman apologize, they don't get to keep their jobs, and Harrell does? And by the way, the last laugh, Doncic, Sunday night. Did you see this line Sunday night on that game against the Clippers? Doncic scored 43 points, 13 assists, and as a guard, had 17 rebounds.
And did you see how the game ended? I'm going to tell you, I'm glad you brought that up. Play the last play of that game, Brandon. It was stunning.
Finney Smith to inbound. Back to Doncic. Doncic pulls up, three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Doncic wins the game at the buzzer!
Let's go!
Now I'm going to say,
but I'm talking about a double standard here, boys, with what Montreal Harrell said and got away with. Nobody's saying
I don't want to get into it. It's the same thing with Kobe Bryant. When Kobe Bryant used the same term that Tom Brenneman used at an NBA referee, it was laughed off. So let's not get into the element here.
There's certain things certain cultures can do, certain things cultures can't do, and this is one of those things. They play against each other. It's intense. Things get out of hand, and they'll say something stupid and ignorant, but that's their world, and that's what they live in.
And they won't lose their jobs, will they, as opposed to Milbury, who didn't even say anything stupid.
That's right. Absolutely.
Let me say this about the NBA playoffs. I really enjoyed watching it. And if you listen to that, I should have said beforehand, the audio mix is pretty good. I had to remind myself there were no people there because the crowd went wild, at least it sounded that way. And the people that were in video were jumping up and down and go, you know, they're doing a pretty good job here of recreating a basketball with no fans. I think it's a lot less obvious in the NBA than it is in the other sports. They did a pretty good job with that. And there's some great stuff going on. They're playing their asses off. Donovan Mitchell, 51 points. Jamal Murray 50 as the Nuggets lost to Utah. Mitchell had 57 in game one. And by the way, we remind everybody.
Listen, there's no lack of intensity here. I mean, they're playing as hard as they can.
Not the issue. That's not why I broached this story.
No, we know that. But I mean, he's talking about how hard they're playing. 50 points here, 40 points there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no letdown despite the bubble. There's no letdown. They're playing.
One guy who always played hard was Dexter Bussey, the former Lions running back. Oh, we got an interview with Dex coming up for you and a lot more on the show. But right now, you regular listeners know that Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies is a longstanding Red Shovel Network supporter, and he served many of you, our listeners, very well by creating financial plans for you, business plans, and trusts, whether it's planning for future family obligations or your own retirement. Why not let Luke develop a comprehensive plan for you? He's got decades of experience, big track record of success in creating custom solutions for businesses and individuals just like you. Call him, give you the number, 248-663 4748, and Luke is going to set up a complimentary consultation. You sit down with him, ask him anything you want, then let Luke do his thing by laying out a plan that fits your individual needs. He's ethical, knowledgeable, caring. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Call again, 248-663-4748. And I want to tell you also about David Hall. You know that interest rates are at a dramatic low right now, and that should encourage almost anybody to take advantage of it before it's too late, gang. Time to refinance your home. You've been thinking about that? Can't do better than with David Hall Mortgage. He's been a part of the greater Detroit community for over three decades. He built his business and has maintained his leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering better options and more personal attention to thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial also provides the fastest service in the business, generally three or fewer weeks. All this has enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners. So go to davidhallmortgage.com to get started, or just call, and this is an easy number to remember, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention, and you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
The best, I thought, entertainment over the weekend is usually the golf, but Dustin Johnson winning by shooting 30 under par, winning by 11 strokes, was just such a solo performance of incredible skill and mastery. He's number one in the world again. Pretty amazing to shoot 30 under par at a course like that. Of course, there are many other scores under par, but still stunning.
And did you say pretty amazing?
Pretty amazing. Well, it's been done before. It's been done
30
before.
30 under. Yeah, it's done by two other guys. Yeah, one was Ernie Els and the other was Spieth. Spieth did it once too, but I mean, 30, think about that. 30 under
playing at 70, playing at 7,200 yards. There was one hole early on. I turned it off because it wasn't competitive. I wanted to see how he started out. He's got 190 yards. The pin is tucked three yards onto the green, about a total of 10 yards from the marsh. He's 190 yards away, hits a 7-iron to the sky, and it drops down 5 feet or 10 feet from the hole. What they do if you play golf is so amazing. I just watch in awe to see these guys hit the ball.
I think when you have a situation like this and a guy shoots 30 under, they should pay him three times the prize money. I mean, I know he won $1.7 million, but you know, that was a $10 million performance.
Yeah, and Danny, it makes you wonder. This, though,
one fact, he never missed a fairway in 4 days.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah, yeah.
And Danny, it begs the issue, why the hell did Brooks Koepka say all that negative stuff about DJ? And he really shoved it up Brooks' butt on Sunday, didn't he?
Yeah. And let me tell you something. Johnson's always been a player. He has never not been a player. He went through a rough time between marriages a number of years back, but he's always been a player.
But he wound up with Paulina Gretzky, so it's not all bad.
Yeah,
now,
that's for
sure. Don't forget now, and I agree with you about Koepka, but Koepka said about winning majors. So he's won 22 tournaments, yeah. But I think only two majors, and he's blown a couple that he had won at the end of majors. So Koepka was a little right about that because Johnson did not, although he finished pretty well, I think, at Harding Park. But anyway, did you see the other golf story where the 27-year-old Sofia Popov, who was ranked 390th in the world, only got into the British Women's Open because of COVID restrictions. Some people couldn't show up at a tournament in Ohio. She managed to finish in the top 10, gets to go to Royal Troon and wins. So she was 304 ranked in the world. Oh, kind of like Gary Woodland to you guys, but no, not the same thing at all. Woodland
not the same thing.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And one other golf story too, boys. Phil Mickelson. Got a lot of work to do before next month's U.S. Open at Wingfoot. Now, that course is in Mamaroneck, New York. It's near where Eli used to live. It's a lovely, leafy old suburb. So, and of course, it's also the site of one of Phil's most bitter major championship disappointments. Remember when he blew the U.S. Open there? Mm-hmm. He came to the press tent. The first thing he said was, I'm such an idiot. Yep. Who would argue with that? So one now Phil says...
Go ahead.
Now Phil says that after he failed to make the cut at the Northern Trust, he's got to get ready for the U.S. Open. His season is over. He has to play the Seniors Tour now. So you two golf experts,
that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah, shouldn't Phil be playing there anyway?
He announced the other day that he's going to start playing a little bit on the Seniors Tour. He's still going to be active on the other tour, but he's going to play more and more and more on the Seniors Tour. Well, and let me tell you, you know what will happen the first year or two out there with him? It went millions of dollars the first 2 years, and then he'll level off.
If he takes it seriously. That's happened every time a great, whether it's Tom Watson, Arnold Palmer, every time.
Surprising story of the weekend to me, I was just reading some wire service reports, and one said Chukwuma Sato snatched his second Indianapolis 500 victory on Sunday, blah, blah, blah. I thought, what Indianapolis 500 is that? Oh, you mean Indianapolis 500? They ran it over the weekend? Instead of, I didn't hear anything about it. I didn't know anything about it. Auto racing has taken a huge dump as well.
I watched the last 25 laps, and they had four laps to go, and they had a monster crash. That's the reason he won the race.
Although they closed it on a caution flag, didn't they?
Yeah, terrible. So they crossed the line on a caution flag. It was too bad because it's set up to be one of those nanosecond wins for somebody. And it was amazing. I've never seen so many 500 cars crash. And these guys, I mean, and they crashed. You know how fast they were going? This is the fastest they've ever gone. Well over 220 at times. Think about that. 220.
And they're right next to each other.
Oh,
and like 2 inches away.
They're sharing lunch.
I think
we had a story that broke late Monday morning just prior to our starting to record. Danny McClain is not going to like it. Eli, I wonder what you think. The Miami Dolphins have announced that they are going to let fans into their games. They've said that they're going to allow 13,000 fans at the Hard Rock Stadium down here for their regular season opener versus Buffalo.
Well, you can do it safely within the rules. The SEC is going to have up to 25,000 again. You can have a quarter. The way it works is you can have 22%. We had this conversation about a month ago, where if you want to give everybody 6 feet of distance, there's got to be the row behind and the row in front plus next to you. Eli. So you can get basically 22% of capacity. So if they're going to get 25,000 into an SEC game, it's 100,000 people can fit into the ballpark, and they're going to let 20 or 25,000.
How many surges do you want? You had the Miami baseball team. You've had the city go crazy with surging when they said, okay, folks, let's go out and play. How many times you want to do this? And now, and you know what? In a couple of months, in a month, maybe less than that, they'll shut it down again. So,
yeah, but then you used to also saw the story over the weekend that they had all these positive COVID tests in the NFL, and they all turned out to be false. They were false positive tests.
Many were, 77 were positive, and then they tested them again, and they all tested in the appropriate way.
Yeah. Hey, Eli, let me ask you a question. What happened on this day in sports?
Oh, my goodness. Can I just say one thing before we get into that? Is that, you know, when the NBA shut down in March and baseball is just in spring training, there was no football at the time, obviously, in March. We were able to deal with that. You know, the NBA regular season is kind of muddling through by March, and the NHL is muddling through waiting for the playoffs, and baseball had barely begun. But I'm starting to pick up from people that having no college football this fall is going to be different than all the rest. Even in fanless sterility, this will be the most shocking example of sports succumbing to the COVID. I've had so many people call me and say, I can't believe I can't tailgate. I mean, Saturday afternoon.
I don't think this is over, Eli. I don't think it's over yet.
Maybe it isn't. But as the Big Ten exists now, and as the Pac-12 does, there is not going to be football. And I tell you, the weird thing about it is they've all said no students, no football. Well, that's changed because now no students at North Carolina State. No students were sent home with Notre Dame. Well, of course, Michigan State is one of them to play football anyway. So now you're going to have cases where, yes, there'll be college football, but no students. So what it really means is that's okay. If they want to play and they all agree on it and they're happy with it, let them play. But don't call them student athletes anymore when there's no students and just athletes. They're no longer a student athlete.
Ohio State right now is trying to catch five other colleges that want to play 10 games right now. They are soliciting they're soliciting all the colleges they can. They don't even have to be a part of their conference.
Yeah.
So they're looking for five other teams that want to play 10 games, and they're going to play football somehow. Somewhere.
That's why I said to Eli, I don't think this is over.
Yeah.
No, well, I don't either.
Will the Big Ten allow them to do that? Does that affect?
I don't know. No. The rules are very emphatic and definitive. They're not supposed to. But you know what? this is a new age that we live in. And like I said a couple of weeks ago, the inmates are running the asylum.
And I have no idea, because I'm not a scientist, but you have it at Ohio. So you mentioned Ohio State. Let's put Justin Fields, the quarterback,
right,
who insists on playing, with Dr. Kurt Daniels at OSU, who was director of sports cardiology. So you have him saying that myocarditis that you guys talked about, Fred, is in 15% of the athletes, and that research in Germany showed 6,500 patients with it, but they were middle-aged, to having these lingering heart problems. Sure. So nobody really knows. And so, you know, if Ohio State, and by the way, Kevin Warren, who was the Big Ten commissioner,
right,
who went on doctors' suggestions, the same as the Pac-12. They were resolute, the Pac-12. It's too dangerous to play. They'll look like geniuses, or if it works in the SEC, they'll be pariahs, as Fred was saying last week. It's very, very true. But anyway.
If somebody said to me, fellas, that all sports have to go away permanently except for one, and you get to pick the one, I would pick college football. Even there's nothing only like going to Ann Arbor or East Lansing and tailgating on a beautiful Saturday afternoon.
And you've only got 13 games a year, whereas in baseball, you got 162.
Well, I know that, but I'm just saying, I just love fall and the college football season.
There is no greater loyalty to any signal in your life, any sign, than your college logo. It goes well beyond the pros. That logo of your school, Michigan State, Alabama, whatever, is the dearest thing to your heart. It brings families together. It puts your life in perspective. And that's why no college football, at least around here, is going to really be the silence on Saturdays will be deafening. All right. This day in sports.
One other thing. Wait a second. I just want to give you the understatement of the last couple of years delivered by Roger Goodell. He said, "I wish we had listened to Kaepernick earlier." Boy, oh boy, I bet he does.
Well, there's a bigger story to that, but
the thing about it, he still doesn't have a job. Nobody wants to give him a job.
Yeah, well, he's done. I don't think he wants a job. He shouldn't get a job, and he wouldn't be any good. And if he's serious about his social messaging, he's better off not playing. Probably. Ready for this day in sports? Got some pretty good stuff. By the way, this was the day that the first Little League World Series began back in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, back in 1947.
The first Little Leaguer to ever play Major League Baseball was?
Not me.
Joey J, Milwaukee Braves pitcher.
Cincinnati pitcher.
Yeah, yeah. Right-hander, yeah. 1972. Now, how far was Comiskey Park to dead center? Because Dick Allen became just the fourth. Jimmy Fox, Hank Reber, Alex Johnson, Homer into their center field bleachers. Was it really? I mean, Tiger Stadium was 440 away. How far was Comiskey Park?
If he hit it in the upper deck in center field, it had to go almost 500 feet.
Oh, well, maybe that's where the bleachers are.
Forever.
I see the bleachers. Okay, yeah. Let's see. Gordie Howe and John Beliveau in Ice Hockey Hall of Fame in 1972. Pete Rose suspended from baseball for life on this day in 1989. And in 1952, Virgil Trucks pitched his second no-hitter of the year. You know what Virgil Trucks' record was in 1952? He was 5-19. Because the Tigers were 50-104. But a great pitcher he was. I would say great pitcher, but he threw four no-hitters in the minors. Debut with the Tigers in 41.
He was a Southern boy. I had him on my TV show in Detroit a long time ago. What a nice man. And, yeah, who'll ever forget that? And, Brandon, if you didn't know that, get to the baseball history books.
Yeah, and his nephew, Derek Trucks, has a band with Susan Tedeschi. The Tedeschi Trucks Band is a great band. And this day in 1980, 40 years ago, Denny's good friend and a potential guest on the show, though he's been hard to nail down, Ferguson Jenkins, arrested for possession of drugs.
I guess so.
1980. Oh, man.
It's a shame.
I wore a finger out trying to call him.
It's a shame the audience cannot see our closed circuit little feed here. You see what I'm holding up to you boys? What? These are my notes on Ferguson Jenkins that have been sitting here collecting dust for the last 8 months, ever since Denny said, "Oh, Fergie's coming on.
Hey,
I've never used them.
We're going to get to the award-winning mailbag in a second. The first one to remind you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. 5 Chevy locations in Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. 9 locations overall. You got Hyundai in New Hudson, Feldman Key of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. So, and also the top-rated pre-owned super center in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. Buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman. Relax with their exclusive. Drive it for 3 days. Love it. or bring it back guarantee, and the unmatchable kicker that can't lose their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. So we're confident you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business. At the same time, support No Filter Sports. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com. It's hassle-free at home or in the showroom. And we also encourage you to consider Power Home Solar. It is America's fastest growing solar energy company, and all their panels are made right here in America. You save money with solar energy, you help save the environment, and you avoid those costly and infuriating power outages, because Power Home Solar has partnered with Generac. Generac is the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery, so you'll never have a power outage again, and you'll lower your energy bills forever. So owner Jason Waller and Power Home Solar have financing starting at $99 a month. You can save an additional $1,800 when you call 1-800-POWER-90 and tell them No Filter sent you. Support our guys so they'll continue to support us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right. Ready for the, did I say award-winning mailbag? That may be a bit of an exaggeration, but.
No, I don't know about that. We haven't been up.
It's award-winning in your mind. We know that. Go ahead.
Yes, and in the minds of all of our listeners and Danny and Brandon, just not your mind. So here we go. You can tweet us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. The first one, I mean, people have some weird Twitter handles. I'm not sure how to read this one. I'm just a B-B-B-B-E-A-L whatever. And he writes, Bob, you were mean to Denny on your podcast Thursday. The poor guy was speechless for the first time in his life. And I responded, that might have been a good thing. Denny was in a hurry to leave. He wanted the show to end early. It didn't. Just ran the normal time. And this prompted Ron Grubbs to tweet, I think Denny probably just had to sign more memorabilia for his website. I think No Filter Sports Podcast should get T-shirts, coffee mugs, etc. too. You can't let Denny McLean have all the extra cash from the best sports podcast there is.
Oh, thank you, Grubber.
First of all, let's start at the top of this. First of all, it's BS.
I thought you might have something
to say. That show ran forever. That almost became a series on Netflix. I'm going to tell you, that thing went on forever and ever and ever. That we had, I tried to control that show a little bit, and then of course, Bob pooped in his pants and went crazy.
Okay,
so. Bottom line is, we don't want to do a show that long ever again. It was a good show, by the way.
Danny, it wasn't that long. It was 1 hour, 37 minutes.
We were here for 2 days, for God's sake.
That's because you didn't have a guest. You had Fred was your guest. Okay, keep going. Next one.
I also wanted to mention this. That, you know, we have a very cool T-shirt design. We've had it for over a year. It's really looked nice. It really looks nice. And then Iffy the Dopester even took it upon himself, remember this, boys, to make 3 cool caps, No Filter Sports Podcast caps, which, of course, the three of you managed to get. So, Brandon, I think you should reiterate now, because Drew Lane says the same thing. You both have told us that the making of and sale of merchandise is a pain in the ass that we don't want to get into. Still true?
We'll do it.
It is difficult to do. You've got all kinds of packaging, mailing. It's difficult.
Denny, it is very difficult. That's why at this point is when I always say, next letter, please.
Please.
A lot of comments from Twitter on how really good, we've already said this, Fred Heumann was on Thursday's show while Eli was away on vacation. Dom Vital responded, Thursday's was the best show yet. No Eli equals no size of disgust when Bob disagrees with lizard liberal Eli. The guest host should fill in more often. He was an even keel viewpoint opinion. Nothing crazy left, nothing crazy right. Great show, Bob, and great sponsor reads. Listener Owl then says,
Time out. Dom Vitale also said that because of me, he doesn't do this day in No Filter Sports. I thought that was a good feature. I liked reading that because he would recall what we did a year ago. And he thinks for some reason, I don't want to hear that. But anyway, I enjoy reading it. So Dom, even though I'm a liberal lizard, whatever a lizard is, please don't.
I got him in my backyard here in South Florida, pal. If you don't know, come visit again.
Next letter, please.
Next letter I was saying was from Mike Howell. This is just real brief. He says Eli's misinformed about the Black Lives Matter movement. And he sent us a news report about some young idiot who says he wants the U.S. government to cut him a check for, quote unquote, reparations. We had 42 people, folks, arrested in a violent BLM demonstration.
I don't want no more BLM. Please, no more BLM.
Okay.
It's tune out to people.
I don't know.
We discussed it before the show.
Let's leave
BLM alone.
Yeah.
Right.
I have mentioned that you can donate to this podcast. If you like to, you go on our website and you just click the donate button. Al Kopach writes us a lot, but I did want to mention his latest for a good reason. Love the interview with Dick Vitale. Very moved by the whole Jimmy Valvano thing. Yeah. He says, rather than donating to our show, he too has now made a donation to the V Foundations to match Eli's.
Yeah, that's great. Al Kopach writes a lot. He donates. He's a good dude. He's one of our top listeners, at least in my book. Go ahead.
And we also have, I need to be reminded of this every now and then, women listeners to this show. I don't know how many, but they do write. We've yet to hear from Kim Garzanetti, but I know one thing. I'm already falling in love with her. Bob. Oh. Okay. So I'm wondering if many listeners have been as stumped as I've been for quite some time. I love your opinions, your points of view, and very much enjoy the mailbag segment. I don't think I'm alone in this, but Eli and Denny continuously give you a hard time. Stop it, guys. Many listeners are new to you, Bob, and we're not tired of you. Maybe Denny and Eli have known you for a long time. Oh, you might say that. And the relationship issues are the fallout from that, but that's their problem. I really enjoy all three of you guys. The podcast is fantastic, but geez, us gals got to come to your defense, Bob.
All right. Well, Bob, all your admiring women folk are going to have to wait a minute while I say goodbye to our radio audience on WCWA. You folks have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Now you can go back to your love letters.
Yeah.
And in closing, I'd like to sum it all up by saying
Craig Thornton, I don't think we've heard from him, writes to say that he's a big fan of Terry Foster's and reads about his blog, how Terry's been saying lately how much he hated radio and didn't want to go back to it. Wants to know if we can have him on the show. Craig, again, every show we've ever done, every guest we've ever had, and that would include Terry Foster, is right on our website. You just go to our website. If you can't sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning on Christmas, we will be waiting there for you, and you can hear anybody you want to. Okay?
Well, that was an old interview with Terry Foster.
If you're a Terry Foster fan and you didn't know he'd been on, go to the website. You can find that. Okay, I don't think we really have anything else.
Yeah, it was actually April 4th of 2019 that we had him on.
Wow, that was back in the early days.
I think one of the reasons why he's mentioning Terry now is Terry's really been outspoken lately.
Yes.
About a lot of the things regarding the end of his tenure at 97.1. Yeah. And there's been a lot of drama there.
I follow Terry.
Where can I read that stuff?
On Terry Foster's blog, which I believe is terryfosterblog.com. Let me confirm real quick.
And on Twitter.
Well, there's an old saying, if you stay too long, you've stayed too long.
Yeah, that's true.
I know what I was going to say.
One of the problems I have with Twitter, and I was warned about this, is, and I love Terry. Terry follows me. I follow him. Half of his tweets are about what he and his wife were making for dinner tonight.
Well, that's
first
nice.
To Terry. Yeah. Nobody gives a you know what.
I do. Send me food.
Hey, anybody can do anything they want. That's why it's your own social media. But it is terryfoster.blog if you want to read any of his works.
And DennyMcLean.food.
That was great. Thanks for the mailbag, Bob. 760-89 balls, or you can text us. You can email us at snofilter@gmail.com. And
I should also tell the women listeners, Eli, they can get my private personal cell phone number. We're going to give that out at the end of the show,
for
the women listeners.
Have them send a picture first. Let's talk to our special guest today.
Oh, what a sexist thing to say.
Destroy the man.
Don't
destroy
her. DennyMcLean.food.
Okay. Dexter Bussey was the Lions' third-round pick out of Texas Arlington in 74, played his entire decade in the NFL with the Lions, became the team's starting halfback in 75, and in 81 became the Lions' all-time leading rusher, breaking Alti Taylor's team record. In the 75 Lions highlight film, here's how narrator Bob Reynolds described young Dexter Bussey.
With Bodine and the offensive line paving the way, Detroit turned loose the season's best find. Second-year runner Dexter Bussey, who slashed and cut and beat a path through startled defenders on his way to the Lions' Offensive Most Valuable Player Award. After carrying for only 22 yards in his rookie season, Dexter Bussey blossomed into a runner with an all-pro future.
Yes, Dexter played 150 games, started 100 for the Lions. Team's leading rusher four times, between 75 and 79. Gained more than 1,000 from scrimmage three times. Was a receiver, a blocking back, a special teams player, and he joins us now. I can't believe you're 68 years old. How you doing, old pal? How are you, Dexter?
I'm good. And I'm looking forward to many, 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 many more birthdays.
Good, good.
Eli, you pick up on that. He's having some problems. Dex, you mind talking about what's going on with you physically, health-wise?
Well, not at all. Basically, cancer, prostate cancer. And, you know, one thing I would certainly suggest and recommend to young men out there is to make sure they're getting their annual checkups and, you know, don't take anything for granted. Checkups alone don't guarantee that you'll go without any incidents, but it certainly means that you'll certainly know as soon as possible so you can get to work on getting things fixed.
Dexter, 11 years as a running back and blocking, the toughest thing I would think, blocking for Billy Sims and getting beat up every time you went through a hole. You got anything lingering from that? I understand you're a part of the head issues, the trauma issues. How do you feel, you know, physically all the way?
Well, physically, you do feel some of the results and the trauma from football, as well as the treatments that we went through. Shoulders, knees, I've had a knee replaced. Shoulders are not the greatest. But all in all, it's certainly nothing that was unexpected. Yeah. You knew when you were playing, and as you went through treatments every week during the season and even after the season and getting things rehabilitated, you knew there were going to be some lingering problems down the road. And I'm certainly not without them. And as far as the head trauma, believe it or not, I can never recall being diagnosed with a concussion, but there's absolutely no way after going through the kind of practices we had doing tour days and practices during the week, as well as the games, that I didn't incur, you know, any concussions. I mean, as long as you came off the field on the right side, they just let you go right to the bench and sit down and nothing was said. If I had wandered off the field on the visitor side, then a lot would have been looked at. But, you know, I'm feeling good mentally, so I'm going to hope and pray that there's nothing wrong upstairs.
Well, when you were doing all that blocking for Billy, did you ever tell Billy, Billy, you run with it for a change, or I'll follow you through the hole?
Well, you know, that's not the way it was designed, and that wasn't the strategy that we were using. I mean, the first season that we were playing together, we didn't divide it equally, but I had a good season and Billy had a good season. But after that first season, we went to a run, Billy, run routine, and it carried on throughout the rest of his career.
Yeah.
And basically, I was just fortunate that I was able to add enough effort to being a blocking back for Billy. All I had to do was just get in somebody's face and stay there for a couple of seconds. And if I could do that, he could find a crack and he could go.
You know, Dex, you listen to all this stuff, this litany of injuries you had and the concussions. We had Lem Barney on the show last year. He's been very outspoken about this, saying, if I had to do it over again, I never would have played football. I would have played tennis. Would you play football if you had to do it all over again?
Depending on what you know, I mean, from what I knew at the time, and in the culture that I grew up in, football was a destination. Football was a way to improve things economically for me and my family. So I don't know that I could have turned down the opportunity to play professional football. Certainly, I didn't have the skills that Norm had, but you know, tennis or golf wasn't going to be an option. So, but football was it, and I don't regret it.
You know, we talked about you leading the way for Billy Sims. It was, you know, you to me were kind of an unsung hero. All the coaches you played for, from Monty Clark, Rick Forzano, just said Dexter Bussey would do whatever it required. Forzano said if the situation required it, he would give up his body, wasn't afraid to get hit. Monty said he's a team guy, does what he's asked to do. It seems like you sacrificed for others, and I guess that's the nature of the game. But you and I talked a while back, and I want everybody to listen to this. You had your greatest day, I think, as a Lion in Thanksgiving Day of 1976. The same, again, you rushed for 137 yards the same day that O.J. Simpson, and you also scored a touchdown to put the Lions up 20-0, but O.J. runs for 273 yards in a loss at the Silver Dome. Here's how it sounded and what you said about it. Listen up, everybody.
The Detroit Lions fans, every one of them standing up and cheering a magnificent performance for Reggie to O.J. O.J. running to the left, turns the corner at the 30. O.J. at the 25, the 20, and falls ahead of the 15. That does it. He broke the record.
We won the game, but O.J. got the glory. It's just the way the cookie crumbled.
That's what you said some years ago. But I know you don't regret it. In fact, you set the Lion record, rushing record, which Billy Sims later broke. So how do you look back on your 10 years with the Lions? You were an unsung hero, but I guess you had your moments, and I'm sure your teammates appreciated you.
Well, yes. I mean, when coaches have confidence in you and your players have confidence in you, that's really all you can ask for, because there was plenty of turmoil. I mean, you had been in and out of the locker room, and so had Bob, and you kind of understood players didn't have a whole lot of control over anything, and just whatever position they put you into, you had to certainly make the best of it. I certainly wasn't happy that I never got a chance to. I think the most I ever carried the ball, if I'm not mistaken, may have been like 260 carries. So it's not like I got enough carries to really make a difference offensively, even though I played special teams and I did whatever was asked of me. But if I didn't do it, somebody else was waiting in the wings to certainly give it a shot. So
Dexter,
you gotta take it when you can.
Today's, with the pandemics that's going on and all the other issues going on in this country, would you have your kids play football at this point in time? Would you let them play?
I would let them play. Well, actually, well, no, not right now during the pandemic, no. I don't think that it's worth the risk, because we know it's out there. And each and every time you see group activities opened up, we see negative responses to incidents with the pandemic. And basically, some sports, basketball may get away with it, tennis may get away with it, golf may get away with it, but there are going to be some incidents even in those sports, and just got to hope that they aren't serious and the guys are strong enough to make it through it.
So, Dex, a lot of people don't know this about you. Eli mentioned you'd gone to Texas Arlington. You're from Dallas. Actually, you went to Oklahoma. You were there a couple of years. Chuck Fairbanks was the head coach, but Barry Switzer was the offensive coordinator. So those are the guys who recruited you. They ran the wishbone, perfect for a running back like you, but you left. Fairbanks went to the Patriots just ahead of the posse. OU forfeited some, what, seven games in the 72 season. You would have been there due to altering grade transcripts. And then Switzer won a national title. You missed that. Do you regret it now? And why did you leave Oklahoma?
Well, when I was there, they couldn't decide what they wanted me to be, if I was going to be a running back, wide receiver, or a defensive back. Once we got to spring ball, they had put me back on offense. What you got to understand about Oklahoma, in front of me was Roy Bell, Greg Pruitt, and Joe Wiley. All of them were perennial high school All-Americans, and we had probably 25 other guys just like those three. So I'm practicing with the varsity as well as with the freshman team, because in 70, when I graduated high school, in college, there was no freshmen playing varsity. So I played, so I had to play freshman ball. I was working way too hard not to have some idea what I was going to be in my second year. So the University of Texas at Arlington, who had recruited me heavily out of high school, continue to stay in contact. And I guess it's just pretty much a precursor with some of the major programs. They were able to recruit heavily back during the 70s, and they were able to stockpile at each and every position. So I just really didn't see a future, because not only my freshman year were we loaded, we were going to be loaded. We were going to bring in another 25 nation finals runners in my sophomore year. So I just thought I had to make a decision to go somewhere that needed a running back and had an opportunity to play, and UTA was that.
Did you like Switzer and Fairbanks? Do you think they were fair to you?
Oh, yeah. I thought they were. My relationship with Chuck Fairbanks, once he had joined the Patriots, was a good one. Each and every year we played, I enjoyed my conversations with him. My senior year in college, Barry Switzer, he coached the coaches' All-American game in Lubbock, and he invited me to participate. And I've had numerous conversations with Barry. He was friends of mine in Dallas when he was with the Cowboys. So everything about the relationship seemed to have been strong and genuine. So I have nothing but good thoughts and certainly good experiences. When I can say I'm a friend of Barry Switzer and a friend of Chuck Fairbanks, that's a good little something to hang on.
Well, you're a friend of Barry Sanders, too. You're still third on the all-time Lions rushing list behind Barry and Billy Sims, who I think just beat you out by 1 yard. But I want to talk about the fact you lead the team in rushing in 1979. Then they draft the great Billy Sims from Oklahoma, which could have been your alma mater, as Bob brought up, but wasn't. So then in 1980, you come off as the leading rusher, and yet you and Billy, even though you switched to fullback, and I don't know what the difference is because you were now farther up, obviously, to center, et cetera. But when Billy came in, the two of you together were amazing. In fact, in Billy's debut against the Rams, you two together set a record of a line rushing record for a game of 330 yards. Here's what it sounded like in the first series of 1980. Billy is there, and now here's Dexter as a fullback leading the way.
Billy Sims following Dexter Bussey goes outside.
Well, you blocked for him. He had 153 that day. You had 111. What were your thoughts back then? Because he did have a great season. I think you had your second highest rushing total as a fullback. And by the way, you averaged 5 yards a carry in 1980. Billy only 4.2. Tell me what that was all about.
Well, that was an extremely good feeling. From the standpoint, without a doubt, we were going to draft one of the premier backs out of college, whether it would have been who was the kid from USC. Was it Bale?
Not White. Was it Charles White?
White. Charles White. Yeah. So without a doubt, we were going to get one. We were going to get somebody. And I was going to have to certainly step aside. I mean, because you don't go out and draft a guy number one overall and put him on the bench and have him being tutored by me. Let's just be honest about that. So I knew there was going to be a change. I just had no idea what kind of change it was going to be. But the coaching staff and the organization, well, I'll say the organization, because it wasn't the coaching staff, they gave me the confidence that I would be playing for the Detroit Lions, you know, beyond that particular year. So I just entrusted that, and I just went to work, giving it what I had, and, you know, I think that they were very fair with me, and it was life, and it was taking advantage of an opportunity, and there's a lot of thoughts and things I could complain about, but it don't help matters.
Right. Who was the one that you feel responsible to for making you the player that you were with the Lions? I'm not talking college. I understand who those guys are, but who with the Lions? Because, you know, our Lions have been so bad for so long.
Did you get any good coaching, I guess, is the question. Yeah.
Well, you know, typically, believe it or not, Joe Bugles, Eddie Kayak, Bob Snelker, those are the three that I remember the most. Now, Bugle was an offensive line coach, but he helped me with so many things on how to read stunts and how to pick up stunts in the most vulnerable part of the of the offensive line. And Eddie Kayak was the same. I mean, he kind of recruited me out of college. Typically back in those days, the pro scouts would pick a guy, would find you, and then there would be a coach that you'd be conversing with, you know, from week to week, just to keep you kind of hot and interested in the team. And so when it came around to draft day, I was very, very comfortable with the Detroit Lions, even though there was no assurance they were going to draft me. But and coaches like Bob Snelker, offensive coordinator, and he wasn't all that keen on run, Billy, run every play. I mean, because, you know, we were wearing Billy out. We run him in the ground. He'd forget certain things. And Snelker, you know, would just always try to keep my spirit up by complimenting me on plays that I would make on special teams or any plays I made on the offense. He just wanted to make sure that he knew that we couldn't keep running Billy the way we were and have longevity out of it. But, you know, he made sure that myself and others on that offense felt that there could be an opportunity, so stay ready.
Yeah, because it looks like you were beaten up pretty good.
Well, he's already been over that.
I understand that. But I follow up on the story. Listen, you do that so many times. It's okay the few times. Yeah. You get hit in the head the third or fourth time, it begins to hurt.
I remember, if I could interject, Billy ran for 437 yards and 81. And they said to Dexter, you know, what's your role? And he said, well, I just tried to knock some people out of the way for him. That's what my job is. can I switch topics?
I mean, if anybody else in that backfield's got the football, they need to try to find a way to get it to Billy. So even though it was in a joking way, we all knew certain situations, because we had various schemes and things would get complicated. I was close to the line, so I could pick up the audibles a lot easier than Billy could, and I'd have to try to give him some kind of signal that the play has changed and we're going to a snap count on two. If he went right or left, the quarterback had to find him and get him the ball, because it was going to be for him anyway.
So this is years ago. You have retired as a professional football player. I'm in the press box at the Silver Dome before a Lions game. Whom do I run into but you? Dex, what's going on, man? What's happening? How you been, Bobby? How you doing? I said, what are you doing? You look great, by the way. You were a member of the NFL's uniform police, and you sat me down in the front row of the press box, and we looked at the guys on the sideline. You say, see what that guy's got on, Bob? That's illegal. I'm going to have to write him up. How the hell did that come about? And you did it for 20 years, right?
Well, yeah, 22 seasons. The NFL, apparently the officials on the field just were sick and tired of being yelled at and cursed at and disparaged by the players. So the league thought it might be better to get ex-players to handle that part of the game day operation. So they brought in ex-players, and, you know, it was for the first couple of seasons, they thought we could do it from the press box, and I'd spend my time up there trying to call down with the radio or telephone. That just wasn't working. And so I moved down to the field with clipboard and a smartphone with a camera. And that made a huge difference, because all of a sudden they saw something real. They still didn't abide by all of our uniform guidelines, but at least when they were fined, they knew that they had been given warnings and evidence had been taken and sent to New York. The league was tired of the players out there redesigning the uniforms and wearing logos that were not licensed. So there were lots of issues, including safety. So we dealt with safety, we dealt with economics, and I would do my report, and the league would determine who would be fined and who, you know, and how they would be disciplined for their violations.
Was there one player in particular that you had to punish over and over and over?
And what would they?
It's typically the wide receivers. It's typically the defensive backs, and running backs would probably be the third.
What would they do, though? What would they do? They would put logos on their uniforms?
Well, Jim McMahon and that headband when the Bears won the Super Bowl.
The headband, any kind of personal message. And some of these guys, you know, before Under Armour became a licensed vendor, before, well, so typically there's a national licensed vendor, and it could have been Reebok, it could be Under Armour, it could be Nike, and they can all coexist, but they have to pay licensing fees to the NFL.
Yeah.
And there are times when some did not, and they might find a player that was willing to wear a garment with a logo that was not licensed. And so my job would be to bring it to their attention, have them cover it up. If not, you know, go to the officials and have them removed from the game.
Now, tell me,
did anybody ever rat you out and say, Dex, what are you snitching on us for? We're pissed.
Yep, I got that. I got that. But, you know, hell, they know the rules just as well as I do, and I would do a presentation before every season. And not only me, but every uniform official throughout the league. So they were well-versed on what was expected. It's just that they had the time and the wherewithal to go out and redesign that uniform from top to bottom.
Tell me if this is true. Spielman said that the year, it must have been his last year, under the Lions, 94, 95, he has a torn pectoral muscle. And it bleeds. And he said, every damn time he comes off the field, there's Dexter Bussey saying, you got blood on your uniform, you got to change it. Do you remember that? Yeah. How many times, if it's true, how many times did you make him change his uniform, Todd?
Well, but that's a safety issue. And that was probably during the time of the, which virus? It was the
AIDS.
Yeah, right.
So blood on the uniform, blood on the body. That was a huge violation. That was a safety violation. That was huge. And unfortunately, that's my job. And if I don't do it, the league sees everything. There are probably 5 or 6 cameras on every player on every play. And so things like that don't go unnoticed. And that was a real problem back in those days. So the blood had to be cleaned up, had to be sanitized, he had to come out of that jersey. And it was unfortunate. I mean, he's out there with balls and bandages, and yet and still, blood is coming out. They still have him on the field. I mean, that's a tribute to him for being able to be so tough. But at the same time, we had to take care of not only him, but those around him.
In your policing inspection job, did you ever have to throw anybody out of the ballpark?
Yes. Yep. Well, you know, because you're talking about a situation, too. We had a player wearing a sun visor, and sun visors have to be approved by a physician. And it was during the pregame. I warned him, then I told his team, designee, and he chose not to come out of the sun visor. So when he came back out for kickoff, again, I had to go to the officials and tell him he's out, and they took him out.
I'll be there.
And he didn't get to come. He couldn't come back until he made a correction.
Who was that? You didn't say his name, did you? Who was that?
Well, no, I wouldn't want to say his name.
I want to hear.
But I just thought it was Chicago Bell, but I don't want to say his name.
Okay. Hey, here's my last question. Obviously, we said that you're third on the all-time rushing list, and you were on the sidelines for probably every home game of Barry Sanders' career. As a fellow halfback, as another runner, how do you categorize Barry Sanders? Did he do things that seemed out of this world? Did you understand how anybody could run that way? What are your impressions? What were you thinking when you saw this young man come to the Lions and do what he did?
Well, he was a combination of power, speed, agility. And so Barry was kind of like the commodities market. He was going to win 6 out of 10. There were going to be 4 that was going to be lackluster, not lackluster for lack of effort, but just the deck was stacked against him. But he was one of those guys that was going to punch you 2 or 3 times, and all of a sudden he was going to knock you out. And it's just amazing. He had the strength. He had the speed. He had the agility. I mean, the moves and cuts he made. I mean, if everything was a straight line, he probably – end up with 20,000 yards as opposed to where he ended up. But no, Barry was just unbelievable, and you just, you know, you couldn't fathom where he could get the energy, where he got the strength, and how he was just able to survive, because there were not many injuries that slowed him down during his career. Yeah. He finished with a flurry, and when he decided to leave Detroit, he was able to walk away and run away. And a lot of us make a walk away, but we couldn't run away, that's for sure.
I have to assume that you believe what I believe. Barry Sanders was the greatest running back I ever saw in my life. He did things that no one else in the game ever did. He had such athletic ability. It was beyond comprehension. And he was to be admired and shocked. You were shocked when you saw the things that he did.
So are you saying, did anybody stack up with him, or was he in a class of his own, I think is what your question
That's
is.
That's what I mean. I said he was the greatest of all time.
It's hard to be in a class of your own, but certainly being the best, I mean, and that's going to be debated. If I told my grandfather that, he'd ask me, did I ever watch Jim Brown run?
Sure.
Certainly Barry, in my opinion, because I saw him and watched him, he's at the top of the class. And certainly O.J., certainly Jim Brown. I mean, even a guy like Zonka, I mean, you know, how they dominated during the time they played was just unbelievable. But Barry gave us a little bit of what they all brought to the table, and he surpassed them all.
Yeah.
I got one more for you, Dex. Just a couple weeks ago, some guys were tweeting that you were always their favorite player as boys growing up. And they wondered, when are you going to be on this show? You were so popular. And here's a tweet I got yesterday. He doesn't leave his name. He says, I worked for Dexter Bussey as a contract computer programmer in the early 90s. He was the nicest, most humble guy you could ever know. Where does that come from? Your family upbringing? What was your home life like as a boy to make you the solid person you are?
Well, I had a mom and a dad, and they both were God-fearing people. And then I was just very fortunate to have role models and mentors, you know, almost at every step. Even growing up out in high school and working summer jobs, on my trips back and forth to Texas from Michigan and from Oklahoma, running into people that truly were helpful. And then even in Detroit, I mean, the city was just unreal. And the Ford family made so many players on that team feel special. I know I wasn't the only one. And then my experiences in the computer industry, calling on Ford, GM, Chrysler, things just worked out. And I'm lucky, blessed, fortunate. Opportunities were there. I mean, even just like, you know, my getting a chance to not necessarily fraternized, but certainly no Bob Page, no Eli Zarek, Danny McClain. So I mean, the name and a list just goes on, and each and every acquaintance was a good one. And from that, I think it's what you get. It's where I came from. So I have to say thanks to all of those on the way that showed me that, opportunity is there. Take advantage of it.
Well, Dexter, good luck battling it. I know you're going to win, and we really appreciate you coming on the show today. Good seeing you. Good talking to you again. Take care, Dexter.
Thanks, Dexter.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks, Dex. And good luck for the rest of your careers.
Thank you. You too.
They just don't come any better, fellas.
No.
They just covered him for, 10 years?
So what's interesting to me is the way we get guests for this show is that, you know, you forget about all the people you know. So I hadn't thought about Dexter Bussey in a while.
It's embarrassing. I know, me neither.
I'm walking in my neighborhood. This is less than a month ago, about 3 weeks ago. And a guy comes by on a bike and we look at each other and he slows down. He goes, Eli, I go, yeah, Dexter, he's my neighbor. He lives two blocks away.
Goodness.
Yeah. And I said, holy, man, you got.
And Matt Shepard lives two blocks the other way. We haven't had Shep on yet either.
And Jackie Page from WWJ lives down the street. So I'm in a media heavy. Anyway,
I must say this, though. The most surprising thing I heard right there was the Chicago, Illinois native Dennis Dale McClain talking about Barry Sanders. To this day, I saw him play so much as a boy. Gale Sayers is the greatest halfback I ever saw. And you also forgot Walter Payton.
I know.
And listen, I think Barry did things that those two guys could not do. The only thing that Barry could not do well was catch the football.
Yeah,
he did not do that very great. He did everything else to the tens. But as far as catching a ball, you know, he was like seven or an eight.
I said that to Wayne Fonts. He goes, Barry's a great player, but you have to understand something. It's only when he has the ball. When the ball is not in his hands, he doesn't know where to go. He wasn't a great blocker, and he wasn't a great receiver. He needed to hold on to that football and then run. But
he did, boy, did he run.
And I'm sticking with Sayers, I'm sorry, but the best fullback I ever saw, obviously, Jimmy Brown.
Yeah, and I agree with you. When I was a kid watching Gale Sayers, the so-called Kansas Comet, he just, you know, each one of them had a running style that was so unique. Right. Sayers was unique. Payton was unique. Right. Barry, of course, totally. And Jim Brown, man, Jim Brown would get up after every play like he couldn't move, like they had just killed him. He would struggle to his feet, walk back to the huddle. You'd think he's done in the next play, grab the ball and knock down four guys and gain 30 yards.
The most amazing thing with Jim Brown is how he could carry two and three people and still pick up another 8 or 9 yards. I found that amazing.
All right, we'll see you again on Thursday for another edition of No Filter
Sports.
We got to
tell everybody who's coming up Thursday, Eli. This should be a fun show.
The Grim Reaper
the
himself.
The Grim Reaper himself.
Stu Grimson, one of the great enforcers in the history of the game. And I'm going to tell you, if you want to learn about enforcers, watch the Bob Probert movie, of which Stu Grimson is in. And it's a very unique part of the culture of hockey that I never quite understood, but some of the enforcers, some of the meanest dudes you ever saw on the ice were some of the sweetest guys off it. A very strange dichotomy, but true nonetheless. We'll talk to
Hey, Bob, you know, one good thing you we could give you that nickname would fit you, the Grim Reaper.
It's already been taken. And you know what? I think the two greatest nicknames in sports history, that the Grim Reaper. And remember Don Stanhouse with the Orioles?
Oh, yeah.
And he was just a weird cut up guy, funnier than hell. Yeah. A card. His Orioles teammates called him Stan the Man Unusual.
Yes. Right.
One of the greats of all time.
All right. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Have a good week.
Have a good one. Stay safe, folks. Bye-bye.